Welcome, rock stars, from Rockland USA Studios in Washington, D.C. This is Rock on the Money. Time to talk about saving, investing, and protecting all of those hard-earned monies. We're here to give you ideas, answer your questions, keep you updated on your path to retirement and financial independence. I'm Craig, your Dave Ramsey Master Financial Coach, along with Amanda, our in-house lawyer and real estate agent, and we're so grateful you've joined us. Call or text your questions or comments 24 hours a day to 989-888-ROCK, 989-888-7625. Check us out on Facebook and Instagram at Rock on the Money, or our website at rockonthemoney.com. And back from surgery, Amanda.
Yes, I am one organ shorter than I was before.
You'll do anything to get out of doing a podcast, I swear.
Yeah, well, I got out of a couple of days of work, too.
Yeah, so did you see everybody missed you? They were posting.
I saw that. That was very nice. You. I really appreciated that. And I also appreciated, Craig, that you sent me a flower arrangement that looked like it should be at a funeral. So that was nice.
The colors look brighter on the florist
the
website.
The colors were fine. It was the arrangement. I'm like, man, this is something that you'd see like next to a casket. Am I dying?
Okay, when you sent me a picture, I thought that. I was like, wow, that looks a lot darker than what I ordered, but maybe they got it mixed up.
It was very lovely. I appreciate it.
Hey, I supported a local florist with that. I had to search one down.
That was very nice. And yes. She actually came to the door and I was in my pajamas. So, yeah. And Roscoe greeted her, so that was nice.
Well, we're glad you're back because there's nobody else to do this podcast with. Actually, there's nobody that's willing to do it, so.
All right. What? Almost at 100%, yes.
Trust me, everybody appreciates you. What do we have coming up on this podcast?
We've got a couple of social media questions, including one phone call message, which will go into our March drawing.
She now has a 5 out of 5 chance. No, 1 out of 5.
One out of 5. Yeah, I was going to say it's only one.
The stock market has totally messed up my math. I can't even figure out what's going on anymore.
So. Yeah. And then we have our topic today is on the sandwich generation. And then we'll wrap it up with a savvy savings segment on energy saving myths. Yeah, remember we talked about energy saving tips in the past? We'll hear some myths today that we're going to dispel.
Here's our first question. By the way, just a reminder, if you want to have a chance to win a gift card from us for the month of March, Amanda, just call 989-888-ROCK, 989-888-7625. Ask us a financial question and we'll put you in the running if we use your question.
That is a gift card to Amazon for $50 or Walmart, your choice.
All right. Here's Rebecca from Virginia.
Hi, Craig and Amanda. It's Rebecca. I have several questions for you in relationship to baby step number 2, debt snowball, in managing debt with interest, deciding whether it would be beneficial to utilize the money in the 457 to pay down the debt is one angle, but then also utilizing that accessible money for the 3 to 6 months of your emergency fund and then moving on along in the baby steps. Seeing as I do have a defined retirement benefit, so I am not totally dependent on that money for a long time, you know, the long-term investing, I'm all for that. And that would be great. And also, love your show. Love what you're doing. Thank you so much. I want to leave you an outstanding 5-star review. Thank you again.
All right, Amanda, I'm actually familiar with where this person works. They work in public safety in Virginia, and they have a 457. A 457, everyone, if you're not familiar with that, it's just a government version of a 401k, and they just have different tax rules. So those numbers like 401k and 403b, those are part of the tax code. It's a line in the tax code with that number. So they just get to use it a little bit earlier than 401k people. It's one of the differences. What they're really wanting to know, Amanda, should they withdraw their 457 to pay off debt and kind of accelerate the baby step process is what they're really looking to doing. Now, this is a little bit different. I want people to understand if you have a 401k, you can just be a little bit jealous of the government people here. I'm going to give you permission here, okay? I know this person, they do have a very decent pension check that they get every month, okay?
And that's wonderful.
And they haven't gotten Social Security yet because public safety people tend to retire a little bit early for various reasons, which we're not going to get into. But most of it is mental and physical health. It's just,
yeah, I was thinking physical health.
Yeah. It's a tough gig, people. Trust me. That's where I came from. They have a good pension. And they're not reliant on this 457. Now, what I have been teaching before we open this group up to the general public, the flight attendants and pilots, and this group used to be just for firefighters in Northern Virginia. It came from a firefighters union where we educated families. That said, what I've always done with a 457, it was a plan B to the pension, was what I always looked at that for. Does that make any sense, Samantha?
Yeah. Yeah. So your pension would have been plan A, and then the 457 is the backup plan.
If they ever took away the pension, which I'm one of the few people that does not believe a pension will be around my entire lifetime. I am literally petrified of the pension going away. Two things they want to know. Can they pay off their debt with it? Which is going to be, in my opinion, a completely different answer than what I would tell a 401k person. Because this pension check they get is a very substantial one. It could be five or even six figures per year.
Oh, I thought you were going to say per month.
Like no. Well, no. It's probably high fours or even five figure per month.
Yeah.
Okay. After tax. Okay. So it's substantial. And they don't even have Social Security yet because they're too young yet. And then they also want to use it as their emergency fund. So let's talk about the emergency fund first. They have this under T. Rowe Price. I've only taken money out once in my 457. It was to pay for a roof. Okay. It wasn't an emergency, but I needed to do a roof. It was like, it's time to do it.
Yeah.
I called T. Rowe Price. I had the check in 2 days. I think that's the key. It took me 2 days.
Yeah.
They're right in Baltimore is where T. Rowe Price is headquartered. I got it in 2 days, came in the mail, put it in the bank. I paid the roofer. Done. Okay.
Awesome.
So what would be your advice for a 3-6 emergency fund?
I would say leave it in the fund.
Because the money
I think 2 days is enough time to get what you would need for 3-6 months, because you already have your mini emergency fund that's super accessible.
Right.
So you have, you know, your $1,000 at a minimum that you have super accessible. Anything more that would get you through the 2 or 3 days it would take to get your check from your retirement fund.
You know what? I actually, the way you explain that, I like that. Yeah. If you keep a partial emergency fund in the bank, liquid, which I think a lot of people would have it if they were in that situation, they'd have some money in the checking account that could pay for an alternator or something like that. But if you had some major, you could wait 2 days to get that.
Yeah. I mean, more than likely, you're not going to need more than the $1,000 mini fund within the 2 days.
Right.
I mean, it's possible, but I can't think of an example.
Yeah. So I would leave it in there as well, because, I mean, frankly, I took my money out for a roof, too. I just hope it doesn't confuse 401k people when we're talking about a 457 and a pension. Pensions change a lot of rules in how you do this if you have a good pension. Some people only get like $1,000 a month from a pension. So that's different. Mm-hmm. This is a fully funded pension that we're talking about here. And then the other one, paying off your debt. Personally, I would say go ahead and pay off the debt with it. Depending on how much this debt is. If we're talking about like...
I was just going to say, it depends.
I mean, if you... Yeah. Okay. Whoa.
It depends on how much the debt is.
Yeah. I agree with you. If we're talking about like 100, 200,000, no, I can't do that. But if we're down to a $10,000 credit card or car or something like that, pay it off. I would do that.
Yeah. So curious, Craig,
go ahead.
Would your answer differ if it was a 401k instead of a 457?
Yes.
Yeah.
Mine because too. The pension is the key here. The pension check, the 457 is a completely different bucket sitting out there. It's like extra
it's
money
on the cake. You it's already the have plan, your retirement check.
Right. It's the plan B if this county government ever got into fiscal situations, they have to cut the pension by 25%. Or 50%, which is happening across the United States at a rapid rate. If you Google it, it's happening a lot of places. Where they're located, it's a very stable pension. 20, 30 years from now, I don't know. What's the worst that could happen if you build up a 457 and have a pension in 30 years? you just have a ton of money.
Right, right.
So there is no negative to doing this. So what I've done with my 457, I've now made enough that it, if I did I'm not going to say what the withdrawal rate, if I do the withdrawal rate properly, I actually have completely replaced my pension, but I'm not using it. So it just continues to grow. We're not going to count the last 3 weeks of the stock market in there because
yeah,
that kind of hurt me a little bit. I've reached the goal that I've always wanted, is to have a plan B to my pension. So anyway, I'm sorry if we kicked that dead horse around, but.
Yeah, no, I just wanted it to be clear for those who, out there who only have 401ks, that yes. this advice would not apply to you.
Yes, please. Yeah, don't. But we do have a big audience of people from public safety because that's where we started. So I wanted to give this one because we have not talked to them much at all, as a matter of fact. So
not directly, no.
But that one, there's a lot of people that retire and it really does affect them. So let's go into social media question two.
Sure.
I maxed out my 457 Roth. I love it. I own 3 rental properties, Amanda. And was looking at something else to get into. My father-in-law did very well in the market, but he was also immersed in it. Options seemed safer than stocks, and it wasn't. You weren't supposed to laugh yet.
I'm sorry, but this okay.
Hold on. Well, options seemed safer than stocks and wasn't something that you had to hover over.
Okay.
Now you can laugh at that one, too. Would you, and I'm not picking on this person, I've already had a discussion with them. Would you recommend trading options to make another revenue stream? So, Amanda, I did chat with this person. Some of these questions come from chats that I get 24 hours a day. They just wanted to go into learning options and trading options as another revenue stream beyond their 3 rental properties and their 457 Roth.
Was this like going to be their new day job?
No, they are also a public safety person as well.
Yeah.
I guess they have a lot of extra time in the firehouse.
This doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. So
one, options are not safer than stocks. You're basically signing a contract that says what price you're going to buy a stock at within a certain amount of time. You don't just get to say, oh, I'm going to buy it when it reaches this point, if it ever does. No, you have to buy it and they'll call in your margin.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Explain what the margin is, because a lot of people don't understand what margins are.
Oh, I'm not sure I even understand what a margin is.
Margin is like a loan. You're taking out a loan from the broker that you're using at a certain interest rate. So you're basically taking out a loan to buy stocks.
Exactly.
Now, so the options.
You're buying it on credit, basically. And then the option, they're going to call in your margin if the option hasn't matured. And you still have to pay for it. So if you expected a stock to go like way down overnight and you said, oh, I'm going to pay $5 for each of the, and you have to buy them in like blocks of 100 shares. You can't just buy like 10.
Right. It's not Robinhood, people. No.
Yeah. You got to buy a block.
Yeah.
So if you thought that this $10 stock was going to be $5 tomorrow and that's what you were betting on, but it went to $20 tomorrow. Yeah. You'd have a big problem on your hand.
And a lot of people lose their shirts on this. Remember, people online selling these courses, whether it's day trading, options, what are some of the other ones? Forex, all this other crazy stuff.
I don't understand why his dad was immersed in the stocks.
Well,
I have a whole portfolio full of stocks and I almost never look at them and they just make money.
Yeah, but I'm the hypocrite. I'm kind of look at this stuff all the time. I don't buy every day, but I used to do some day trading. So I'm familiar with what's going on here a little bit.
But you didn't have anything really else going on. You had time for that.
I'm kind of a loser. So that is absolutely correct, Amanda.
I would never, never go into day trading unless I had a lot of time, because you have to really do a lot of back end research on the company and all sorts of external factors that may or may not come into play.
I teased day trading in another episode where I was spending about 5 minutes explaining what really goes on during day trading sessions between 9:30 and 10:15 in the morning. It is kind of, I'm not going to say scamish, but it's pretty damn close.
Yeah.
Cause I've been in these groups, but anyway, this is a fact, Amanda. 78% of day traders lose money.
Yeah.
And when we're talking about day trading, we're also talking about options. It's all the same thing, kind of. Revenue of selling any high course, whether it's cooking or all this stuff online, is a great revenue stream, especially if it's pre-recorded and sitting there. It's just reselling. Like, what is it, Udemy? Udemy or whatever. I mean, those guys make a good amount of money. They just make the course, sits there, you come along and pay it, and you take it on demand. Those are great revenue streams. So that's all these, what these guys are doing. Then they want to sell you additional things like the live chat rooms and all this stuff during, when the markets are open. Don't get suckered into this stuff. You're going to lose your money. 78%. That's almost like going to the blackjack table, Amanda.
I was just thinking it's like going to the casino.
No, it is. And day trading is. And you're competing against computers and algorithms. The humans are not involved anymore. And that's what you're competing against. Do you really think you're going to win against automated computers and the big boys out there? You're just some little guy sitting in your house in your mommy's basement. Trying to buy stocks and you know, and it happens so quick. So basically I gave him a hard no. I was like, no, I can't tell you. I didn't even give him a partial answer. I didn't let him finish. I said, no, I can't do that.
Well, that's rude.
I'm sorry. I'm a coach. Do another 10 push-ups. So anyway.
Well, let's move on to social media question three. I'll read this one to you.
Okay, great.
So this is where I stand. I have $20,000 in student loans and $5,000 car loan and no credit card debt.
Oh, okay.
I have $10,000 in savings. I could probably pay off the car right now, but I want to go to flight school, which is very pricey. I don't think I can go to flight school without taking a student loan, which is a big no-no, according to Dave, but what should I do? She's answering her own question.
Yeah, I think she already answered it, but keep going.
I've only been in the U.S. for 7 years, but I'm going to a four-year college right now to complete my bachelor's. That's where I'm stuck too. If I choose management, I'm only 9 classes away, but accounting is 16 classes away. I found one flight school in Indy. That must be Indianapolis. It's $65,000, but I have to sign a 5-year contract with them. If I keep working at the rate I'm working now, I can be debt-free by March 2021. Okay, so like next year.
Yeah.
If I don't enroll in flight school, should I pay off my current debt before enrolling in flight school?
Would you like to answer? You want me to take a stab at this?
I would say don't enroll in flight school.
Yeah, pretty much. And I actually talked to this person. This is a longer chat that was going on. And I happened to be out flying over the weekend, this past weekend. And I had some pilots in our van heading to the hotel. Said, hey, guys, I need to ask you a question. So I started presenting this. I didn't tell him who it was. I keep privacy to everybody. But I said, and as soon as I told him about the $65,000 training, they said, these schools are all over the place. There is no guarantee you're going to get work. They just guarantee you an interview. It's very difficult. You're not making any money while you're in school. So that was a question. She told me she would work Uber, like wait tables. The whole thing just sounded really bad. And the pilots were really against it. They were saying,
No, I had a really good friend who went to flight school in Miami. She completed it. She was actually number one in her class.
Wow. Congrats.
And wanted to be a pilot and could not be a pilot. They wouldn't clear her for like medical reasons.
Why? Hold on a second. Why wouldn't they just put the people through the medical first before starting the training?
Well, because then they wouldn't make $65,000 off of a person.
Yeah, I was pretty much thinking you were going to tell me that. Well, that's sad.
So what else I would say about this individual here who submitted this question is it doesn't sound like you're 100% committed to what you want to do with your future. You haven't even decided how you're going to finish the current degree you're in, and you're almost done with it.
Yeah, that was a big thing.
So that's
with
a big red flag for me that you are nowhere near knowing for sure that you even want to be a pilot to throw another $65,000 towards a maybe.
Yeah, exactly. And the thing I saw was 9 classes away from
a management degree.
From management and 16 away from accounting. An accounting degree is huge.
Yeah.
That is not going anywhere. If you could finish either one of those and just get a bachelor's degree, a 4-year degree, period, especially management and accounting. If you can get both of those, I understand you. It's probably not what you want to do, but you're that close. 9 classes away and 16 from accounting. Finish it, pay off the debt, then determine if you want to go do flying classes. What I told her to do as well, she needs to talk to a lot more pilots and get a better, well-rounded answer. I don't think she investigated that. One thing that really did kind of give me another red flag, Amanda, I didn't tell you already. She sent me the pay scale for one of those airlines, which we are greatly familiar with. And they make a lot of money per hour. And that was one of the first things she sent to me. So I'm a little I'm not saying that that's what she was targeting, but if somebody starts telling me how much they're going to make early in the conversation, I hope they're looking at the passion of flying as opposed to the money on the other end. Does that make any sense?
Yes.
I want it to be in your heart that you truly want to do this. I don't want you to go after the money because that usually does not have a good ending. I'm not saying you would do that in law or legal.
I was just thinking, are you talking to me specifically?
You love the challenge, though. You do.
Do I?
You do. You know it. You're a workaholic. You outdo me.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I did work on Friday, even though I wasn't supposed to.
Everybody out there listening, this girl had surgery and she was, you were, tell me if I'm wrong. You're laying on the gurney, getting ready to go in there for surgery and you're grading papers and stuff.
I was,
My God, man.
I turned down all the pain meds because I had papers to grade. Grades were due Tuesday night.
Gotta get it worked on, man. Hold on, doctor. I gotta get this done.
You know how long you have to wait to see a doctor sometimes?
I don't get sick. I don't know.
Read a book? I didn't even bring a book. So my husband brought me my laptop and I finished my grading.
That's a good man you got. All right. How about we've already gone 25 minutes. Let's take a quick break and then we're going to come back and do what?
We have a topic on the sandwich generation and then we'll wrap up with our savvy savings.
The sandwich generation. I thought of a joke, but I better not say it because it's National Women's Day and that would be a bad thing.
Now, before we go on break, National Women's Day was on Sunday, the same day as daylight saving time. So even a day dedicated to women, we had 1 hour less than a normal day.
See, it says men every time, man, getting you.
Yeah. Right, well, not only do we get paid less, we get less of a day.
I didn't realize that. All right. Well, on that note, we'll be right back. You're listening to Craig and Amanda. Well, hold on. You're listening to Amanda and Craig. Rock on the money. We'll be right back. To Rock on Money with Amanda and Craig.
Yes.
It's National Women's, we'll just say International Women's Week.
There you go.
There you go. Hey, don't forget.
We got ripped off on our day.
She's bitter. Hey, don't forget you can win a gift card by just merely asking your financial question instead of texting it to me. You can call 989-888-ROCK, 989-888-7625. Currently, you have a 1 in 5 shot in winning a gift card.
Awesome. Those odds.
Boy, you have recovered from your surgery very well.
Yes.
Sandwich. What is the sandwich generation, Amanda?
Okay. Well, the Generation X is commonly called the sandwich generation for two reasons. Each reason is part of the bread of the sandwich.
Oh, I get it now.
Yeah. First, they are sandwiched between the millennials and the baby boomers, both groups that seem to hog media coverage lately. And marketing budgets. But more importantly, many Gen Xers face the problem of having to care both for their elderly parents while also still caring for their own adult children or younger children, I guess it could be.
I could slightly relate to this.
Yeah. You know, Americans are living longer. The life expectancy is now 78.8 years. But older Americans are not necessarily healthy or independent during those bonus years. And as we've talked many times before, a lot of them may outlive their money.
I think that's going to just get worse.
It is, yeah.
Yeah, the current situation of financial affairs, yeah.
Yep. Mm-hmm. So what happens when they run out of money? Well, a lot of times they have to move in with Johnny or Sally and in a, like a mother-in-law suite or an extra bedroom in the house.
I don't think I could do that.
Yeah. According to research conducted by the Pew Research Center, nearly half or 47% of adults in their 40s and 50s have a parent age 65 or older and are either raising a young child or financially supporting a grown child.
Wow.
So one out of every two people have both an older parent and a financially supported child. According to another survey, the yearly average cost for assisted living in the U.S. is now $45,000. So that's, I think, I don't know, Craig, what is the median annual income in the U.S. now? Do you know? It's right around that, right?
Yeah, I think it is, actually.
Yeah. So that's basically your entire salary going to assisted living for your parents.
For some reason, I think it's like 52 or 56 is popping in my head without Googling it.
It's right around there.
Hey, so. Google. What's the average annual income in America?
According to Wikipedia, the Bureau of Labor Statistics reported a median personal income of $865 weekly.
$31,000 a year.
2017.
Oh, okay.
The U.S. Census Bureau lists the income at $31,099.
Hey, Google. Google stop.
Okay, well, Wikipedia is a bit behind because that's from 2016.
Yes.
And nursing home care with a private room is $97,452.
Ouch!
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So these, obviously these exorbitant costs can quickly deplete an older parent's hard-earned savings. So think about yourself and how much you have in your retirement fund. And if you had to use, $100,000 a year, basically, just for your room and board, where would that leave you?
I think the average stay in a nursing home with advanced care is 3 years. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I don't think people typically will live past 3 years in that at that state. So I've heard 300,000, 200 to 300,000 is what you need for that type of care.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot of money.
Yeah. So what do you do? You know, if you're responsible, you're sandwiched here in the middle and you've got elderly parents who need care and you've got, your college age son or daughter who's moving back into the house because they haven't found a job after graduating. It's a big responsibility. So the first thing, and we've talked about this before, you want to prepare a budget.
There's Amanda's budget again. That's been a common thing in every episode we've said.
I mean, regardless of who's in your house or what your expenses are, you need to have a budget each and every month. But once you sit down and the situation is new, you need to adjust your budget. So then share what you found with your parents and children. This should be an open conversation with everyone. You know, it's not fair to carry the entire burden of the finances for both all three generations. Here's something interesting that I thought about while doing this. You know, what do you know about your parents' finances?
I know for me, I know nothing because, you know, a lot of the people in that generation will not open up and tell you. You have to almost force it out.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I just have a very high level vague understanding. But in terms of details, no, I wouldn't be able to budget for them.
Do you think that's a generational thing where different generations are more open to be open and honest? It seems like that. What generation would they be? What's beyond?
You're not gonna want to hear this. My parents are only slightly older than you, Craig.
Ouch. That's funny.
It is funny. Well, here's another question then. What do you know about your son and daughter's finances? How much detail?
Oh, I know a lot.
And how much do they know about yours?
I actually am very open with them. I actually send them, even though you call me a hypocrite when I look at my accounts, I actually share screenshots of what I've made in my 457 401k. I want them to see how it goes up, how it goes down, so they understand that whole thing. So I'm very open and honest with that. I am beyond what I've said earlier about replacing my pension. I'm also building legacy for their future. I don't tell them how much they're going to get, but I want this branch forward. To pay
but
forward.
That's like income and savings. Do you share all of your expenses with them too?
Oh, when I was paying off their student loans.
Oh, I bet. Yeah.
I also told them what I was paying off at the same time because I still had some debts. Yeah. Like I got forced to buy a car because I had one totaled from an accident where I got my neck injury and all that stuff a couple of years ago. That was when my father was very ill and, right. you know, I used all my money for him to take care
exactly.
of him. So that was a decision I made, right or wrong, baby steps, whatever. It was my dad, and that's what I did. So,
yeah. So, yeah, I mean, it's just something to think about. You know, think in what would you do if both of them all or everyone had to move in at once? What would you do? Do you know what people could contribute and where you could cut back? So think about that in terms of budgeting there. The other thing you can do is purchase long-term care insurance. So long-term care insurance can help both you and your parents financially. The average cost for a couple age 60 is around $3,400 a year.
Okay.
The sooner you buy long-term care insurance, the less expensive it should be. However, you're going to pay it per year from the time you purchase it until you need it. So it could actually be long-term more expensive.
Right.
Right. So you don't want to buy it too soon either.
And let me inject one thing with this. If you do the baby steps that we're talking about, I'm talking to the 20 to 40 year olds right now. If you pay off all your debt, you build up your 401k, IRA, blah, 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 and you fund that thing, right? And yeah. you build it up to be $500,000. By the time you get up to age 50 or 60 and you're in that seven figure mark, what we're talking about with this long-term care insurance, you really may not need it at that point.
You may not need it.
Because yeah. now, like where I'm at now, a lot of these different costs that you would have to pay when you get older, I don't have to pay more. I'm self-insured.
Right.
And that
right.
you are legitimately self-insured. So I don't, my kids won't have to pay for it. So as you make more money, we've said this before, as you save more and build wealth, it actually gets cheaper to live. Less expensive because mm-hmm. you don't have to buy all these other things. I don't have life insurance, Amanda.
Yeah, and people you don't need it. We've talked about that before.
Right.
So the other thing you want to do, obviously get your legal paperwork in order. So make sure, you know, you have your durable power of attorney, your healthcare directive, your healthcare power of attorney and updated wills. All the things we talked about a couple episodes ago with our guest, Sam. You know, getting that in order now and knowing exactly what it says for everyone is going to greatly simplify problems as your parents age and as issues come up. You want to make sure you're getting tax benefits. So if you declare a parent as a dependent, make sure you're getting all of the possible tax benefits. Talk with a tax specialist about getting special deductions for medical home improvements, medical expenses, you know, care expenses.
I'm going to claim stupidity. I didn't realize or never thought about it. You could claim a parent as a dependent.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know. I just never thought of that.
Talk with a tax specialist. Make sure you're doing it right. These types of things, I would not rely on TurboTax to get right.
No, these are special circumstances. You need a yeah. professional. Absolutely.
Yeah, and actually, I'm gonna say that a couple of times over the next month as we get closer to tax day. I've seen a couple of things in the group chat, people asking very complex tax-related questions and saying, you know, how do I do this in TurboTax? Well, the real answer is you don't if you want to not get audited.
Yeah.
Spend the money, go see a professional. It's worth every penny to get it right. All right. So next, also many employers offer flexible spending accounts, which allow you to contribute up to $2,500 a year into a health account and a dependent care account. If both you and your spouse are employed, then you might be eligible to contribute $2,500 each for a combined $5,000. And this money can be used for your own medical costs, your kids' medical costs and care needs, and also your elderly parents' medical care and costs. If they are declared as your dependents.
And just to reaffirm what you said, FSA, not HSA.
Right. These are FSA, flexible spending right. accounts, yep. not health spending accounts.
Yep.
For grown children who return to the nest, you should be having them pay a portion of your household costs. This helps them to build independence. And it can be a sliding scale, you know, based on their income, but it should be something that kind of hurts a little bit for them to pay. It shouldn't be easy or that's where they're going to stay is in the nest. You know, eventually you've got to kick them out and they're going to have to either flop to the ground or learn to fly.
That's funny. Flop to the ground. Well, like old birdies just poof.
Yeah, sometimes they don't make it so well.
They'll be all right, okay. They'll be all right.
Yeah. And then, you know, finally, you know, you don't have to be the only one unless you really are an only child, but ask other family members for help, you know?
And even if you have other family members, you may be the only one. So think about that one.
Yeah.
Oh, that was really good. The sandwich generation.
Sandwich.
Yeah.
When I say sandwich, do you think of like a hoagie or an Oreo? Because I kind of think Oreo.
if you're going to compare a sandwich to anything with chocolate, we're going with the Oreo. Savvy savings, Amanda.
Yeah, so this is interesting. This is kind of a reverse savvy savings today.
Whoa, getting all fancy after surgery, ain't you?
Exactly. We're going to put it on a 180. So I came across an article that had some energy saving myths, which I thought were really interesting. So myth number one, and we've just got, I think, six of them today. So we're going to, this will be a short segment today. Yeah. The first myth is that using portable electric space heaters instead of running your central heating.
Oh, yeah.
So do you think cheaper to use just a space heater in the one room you're using or to heat your whole house?
Oh, are you asking me?
Yeah, sure.
I would say heat the whole house.
Yeah. So, I mean, but that's the common logic, right? Like, right. Why heat the whole house when you're just working or sleeping in one room?
Right.
Or maybe I should shut the vents in that room, one room. But electric heating is actually the most expensive heating available, which is what those portable electric heaters use. They're also fire hazards.
Oh, big so time.
While you save
you're telling
money,
me
you
I'm might, a firefighter. They're
I know,
terrible.
You might burn your house down. But running one small 1500 watt space heater, you know, just enough to heat a single room, might actually cost you more than running a gas furnace for your entire house.
Whoa.
Yeah.
You know, they sell a lot of those things too.
They sell a lot of those. You know, I'll tell you, when I was living in Colorado, I'm always cold, but when I was living in Colorado and we had a two-story house, the upstairs was always warm and the downstairs wasn't, just because we had an open stairway and, you know, heat rises. Yeah. Mm-hmm. My office was downstairs, though. I was always cold. So I actually did have a small space heater just under my desk.
Yeah.
But that was a supplement, not instead of the house heat.
My previous house was the same way. My office is in the basement. It was cold down
there. Yeah. Yeah. It gets cold. But that's in addition to not as a replacement. All right. Yeah. So the next myth number two, leave the ceiling fan on to cool your home.
Now, I've heard this one a lot.
Well, and I actually talked about this in one of our prior segments, that fans cool people, not homes.
Right.
So the cool sensation brought by ceiling fans is the result of evaporation of moisture on your skin. The actual temperature of your home doesn't change. So if you're not under the fan as it runs, you're not getting any of the benefits. So we talked about that in one of our electricity saving segments, mm-hmm. that if you leave the room, you should turn the fan off because, you know, it's cool. It's not cooling anything if you leave the room.
See, I just bought one, a really nice designer one for, getting ready to redo my house on the inside. Yeah. And I'm feeling kind of stupid for buying it now, but it's going to look cool.
It's going to look nice. Plus, you have a smart home, right? Or a smart hub.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Did you get one that you can control from your phone or your smart hub?
Oh, yeah. But the fan is not really connected to that unless I put something on the switch on the wall.
Oh, okay.
It's a pre-wire outlet, which I've never put anything up there yet. It's in a great room. It's a two-story great room where the fireplace is. So
yeah, I know. But some of the fans nowadays are Wi-Fi enabled.
Nah, I saw those. But this is one of those designer things. It's almost like a propeller thing, aviation style. It's not the ones you buy at Home Depot, Lowe's. These are... Okay. These are a little more expensive. I did not use savvy savings with my ceiling fan.
You're fancy.
Well, I'm designing the house for resale.
Yeah.
Updating it. So.
Okay. Yeah. All right. So myth number three. All right. So this is going to sound like it's against what I just said, but here's the myth. Turn off the lights and appliances each time you leave a room.
Ooh. Tell me about this one.
Yeah, I know. This one kind of surprised me a little bit too, but it makes sense when you think about it. Some lights, like compact fluorescent light bulbs, have a certain amount of energy that they must burn at the beginning when you turn them on before they consume a relatively even amount of power. And the amount of time is at about 15 minutes. So if you're going to return to the room before 15 minutes elapses, it actually makes more sense to leave the light on than to turn it off and then 5 minutes later turn it back on.
So that's those... You said compact fluorescent. What about LEDs, though?
Because
I've been working on replacing all those.
Yeah, so. I don't have that detail. Huh. So that would be interesting to know. But the same does go for a TV or video game console that has to be booted up if you've powered it down.
I did know that. because I used to leave my computer on all the time. But if I'm going to be away from it a long time, then I do shut it off.
Right.
Yeah. But I used to leave it running.
Yeah, because it takes a lot of energy for the boot up.
Right.
Yeah. So that was interesting to me.
Yeah, that was interesting.
Yeah, because, you know, the old adage for years and years is if you leave a room, turn the light off. But it depends what kind of light bulb you have, I guess.
Yeah.
So the fourth myth, keep the temperature consistent even when you're out of the house.
Ooh, I like this one because I know the answer to this one with our smart thermostats.
Yeah, go ahead and tell me.
Well, we have the same brand, Ecobee. Not saying that that's the best one.
Yeah.
Just the way it works. It knows when I leave the house. My key fob on my works with it. So if I leave my house, it'll actually shut off and go down to a temperature that I set at, down to like low 50s if it's wintertime.
Oh, wow.
If it's summertime, I let it go up to 85 if it's summertime.
Yeah.
And then as I come home, well, I have two different zones.
But you've got the full-blown Ecobee. I've just got the light version.
No, mine just has Alexa in it. That's the only difference. And I disabled it, so that was a waste of money. But yeah, I have it also working with...
That's why I didn't get it, because I was like, I don't have Alexa.
It works with my alarm system. Okay. I have multiple alarm systems, but one of them I have is called Abode. So Abode knows when I'm near the home or when I, you know, the fencing, geofencing around my house. So as I arrive, it automatically starts changing things.
That's crazy. So one day we'll have to do a savvy saving segment on how many alarm systems you should have in a home. But
I have a bunch. So and I always felt weird before I did this podcast. I would recommend things. I'm like, wait a minute, I just told everybody which alarm I have. So now I have to have multiple ones. I'm just paranoid.
So anyway, this myth here, it does take extra energy to warm up or cool down your house if you've turned the system down when you were at work for the day. However, it takes a lot more energy to keep it heated or cooled for all those hours while you're gone.
Yep.
Myth number five, heat your home faster by turning the thermostat higher than it needs to be.
Wait a minute, what? Heat your home faster by dial all the way to the right and let it heat.
Yeah, like if you get home and you're really cold, crank it up to 90 and then adjust it as the house warms up. That's what
I have to admit, when I go to I'm in hotels all the time. I know it sounds like I'm a dirty old man, but I'm in hotels a lot of time. I actually will go in there and I just do that.
Yeah,
it's not my thermostat. What do I care?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's like the thinking is driving faster can help you reach your destination sooner, right? But
so you say HVAC, I'm wrong?
Not a car. Yeah. So your HVAC runs at a constant. So turning the thermostat higher will just end up overheating your home. But again, smart thermostats can be programmed to help you achieve maximum comfort.
Yes.
Without wasting that energy.
Have I mentioned how much of a fan I am of those expensive thermostats?
I love it.
You take a hit on the purchase.
Like way, but, and the light version was a lot cheaper than the full.
Yeah,
one.
It was. Don't buy the one with Alexa. But I am a huge fan. Take the hit. Buy it. Don't go into debt, though.
No, but some of your energy companies might even give you a rebate.
Yeah, very popular. I like the Nest. I like Ecobee. There's a bunch of great versions out there. But anyway, I've saved so much money. It's unbelievable. Yeah. Anyway.
All right. So here's the last one. Close vents and doors to help save energy.
Uh-oh, because I do a lot of that.
Yeah. So here's the thing. Don't close too many vents as this might cause undue pressure and create leaks leading to more energy waste.
Uh-oh.
Although you can manipulate comfort in your home by opening or closing a vent, the heater or air conditioner continues to produce the same amount of air. So energy saving shouldn't be the reason to close them.
Oh, okay.
If you shut doors to unoccupied rooms, this won't cause your unit to run more efficiently either. So like shutting vents, this tactic will only lower the temperature in a room, which in turn will cause the overall temperature in your home to drop and cause your HVAC unit to actually have to run longer.
Well, I'm guilty. I have a lot of empty rooms.
That's all I've got. But you've got two different zones on yours, so you can keep one zone cooler than the other.
Yeah, the whole upstairs is completely shut down because I'm downstairs all day. And around 7 or 8 o'clock at night, it starts firing things back up.
Yeah.
And then so the downstairs shuts off. Yeah. I don't know if you know this, but Ecobee, you can buy vents, replacement vents that will automatically adjust the louvers to adjust the temperatures, make sure you're all even in the house.
I looked at those and they're a complete waste of money.
Yeah. And I thought that was way too much money to spend. Yeah, the cost
they're a complete waste. And like we said, any HVAC reputable person will tell you do not do that because it actually puts more stress on your unit and then you have to replace your unit.
Look at you, girl. Damn. Yep. Without an appendix, you're pretty smart.
On that note, it's time for me to go rest and recover.
Yes, it is. Well, thank you very much, Amanda. And as always, a quick reminder, check out our website, rockonthemoney.com. We have show notes. All the podcasts are located right there. The website turns into a player. You can play it right on your phone. Plus, there's links there so you can subscribe to the podcast on your favorite platforms, including Apple, Google, Stitcher, Spotify, and TuneIn. And if you could leave us a review and some star ratings on those platforms, it really, really helps us out a lot. Check out our Facebook group community with over 3,000 people in there. Facebook.com/groups/your401k. And also check out our Facebook page at Rock on the Money. So long, everybody. We really, really do have a lot of gratitude for you listening, sharing, and spreading the word. You guys are great. Amanda and I cannot emphasize how much we appreciate you guys. So long, and we'll see you again next week. Until next time, America. America's Frontline USA. All opinions expressed by the host are solely their own and do not reflect the views of any company, affiliates, or advertisers. Investments or strategies mentioned in the show may not be suitable for you. Before acting on any information in the show, you should consider whether it is suitable for your particular circumstances and strongly consider seeking advice from your own financial or investment advisor.